welcome to the Toronto Argonauts are the Grey Cup champions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wait, no, that's something else.
But it's true, and it's a good day.
Oh, we will talk about that today. But this is, first of all, the more official introduction. Episode 14.
14?
Baker's Dozen Plus One, or whatever it is, of Upon Further Review with...
The Podcast Profs.
And are you still...
I am still Dr. Soren Fanning, your friendly neighborhood historian, and you are...
Still Dr. Anthony Moretti, hopefully friendly neighborhood journalism professor in the Department of Communication at Robert Morris University.
You enjoyed Canada.
I got to tell you.
For those of you who can't see him, the man has a wide grin on his face. He has just returned from our good friends to the north.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back just reeking of free healthcare and poutine. So
not Putin, poutine.
Poutine,
right?
Poutine.
Exactly.
Which
big
is really tasty despite its visual appearance.
It is a
depending.
It is,
there's really good poutine and really bad.
Oh yeah, it is a food that can go south in a hurry. And that voice you just heard, the voice in your head, is our producer extraordinaire, Mr. John Roland.
He's Mr. now.
Wow. I was ever not Mr.
I was going to say the man's gender intact.
Did I miss something?
John, and now he's like Mister.
I'm giving him props because he controls the mic.
Oh,
I mean, you can use the true formal unmarried man of Master. I mean, I'm okay with that.
The true. What did he just call himself?
Master Roland.
Technically, if you're not married in a male, you're supposed to be called Master, if I remember right. But that's like a really outdated thing that
you know
people
what you
don't
should
do
start
now?
Doing? You should just add Esquire to the end of your name from now
Ooh,
on.
That would be cool.
Doesn't that actually mean something?
Not anymore.
Do titles really
oh,
mean
I'm
it?
Sorry.
No,
are
no,
you
no,
a
no.
groom for a knight? If so, yeah. Then it means something.
Oh, I mean, maybe.
Yeah, but on a serious note, no, he is indeed Mr. John Roland. We were, yeah, just... have a little fun with, you know, titles.
As you are wont.
Sort of indeed. Yes. But the funnerest title is Grey Cup Champion. Now, true
story. The 105th
Grey Cup. Now, true story. As folks who know me, I hope that's a good thing. No, I am a gigantic fan of the Canadian Football League, gigantic fan of the Rouge, which is the opportunity for a single point on either a punt or kickoff that goes into the end zone, presuming if the ball is not touched or returned out of the end zone, or a missed field goal, presuming it doesn't hit the uprights or the crossbar.
Right.
And 40 or 50 some odd seconds left in the game, and I am watching from the other end zone where my seats were, Argos kicker Liram Hirilahu line up for the roughly 40-yard field goal. And the first thought I had was, oh, please miss it. I want this game to end 25-24, and it would end on a Rouge, and I would be just the happiest person in the world. And as soon as the kick went through, my phone was buzzing all over the place.
Oh, sure.
Friends of mine were like, he made the kick. I know. It's a great thing he made the kick because my team is winning now with 49 seconds. But on the other hand, the Rouge would have been perfect.
Now I need to get an answer to this. We will talk about weightier matters.
Yes.
But before we do, there is video evidence of you at the 105th Grey Cup sporting a BC Lions cap.
Yes.
I need to know the story behind this.
I posted this on my blog this week. It has become sort of an unintended great story. At last year's Grey Cup, there is an event that takes place every year, usually the day before the game, which is the CFL Fans Fight Cancer group gets together for an event to raise money for cancer, obviously. Last year, at the event in Toronto, I won a box of 6 wine glasses. Now, as you know, there's a good story here. As you know, I don't drink alcohol.
Right.
Because of history of a family member. And so combine that with the fact that I was going to be running around Toronto all day, I really didn't want to be toting 6 wine glasses.
Right. Somewhat breakable.
It's not for me. So I look around the room to see if there's anybody I can make a swap with.
Right.
Well, a woman had won a package of things that included gifts, or not gifts, but stuff for the BC Lions, one of the CFL teams.
Right.
So I approached her and I said, I've got a trade proposal for you. All right. 6 wine glasses for the BC Lions ball cap. And she thought I was kidding. She's like, you want to do what? I said, yeah. And I explained the story as to why. And she said, Okay, I still think she was convinced she got the better end of this deal. But understand, I gave up 6 wine glasses
that you'll never use
for a ball cap right. that I wear somewhat regularly. Well, this year...
Anthony Moretti, street busker.
Is that a good thing?
No idea.
I was going to say, that might be a good thing. So anyhow, so it's a true story, okay? This gets more betterer, all right, okay. as it goes. Last year, I also won a package that included a Saskatchewan Rough Riders computer bag.
Very nice.
And I also bought a Toronto Argonauts sweatshirt. All right.
You only got 5 more teams and you complete the set.
This, yeah, 6. 9-team league.
That's, I can't, I'm a historian. I
That's
don't
That's why he's a historian, not a mathematician. Get Monica Van Deeren on line one, please. Who does know math? No.
Does know math.
That's like
that colleague of ours knows levels of mathematics
that I can't that, spell.
Yeah. Previously undiscovered.
Fractals or something like that, whatever it is. So anyhow, I wear this hat because now it becomes somewhat identifiable. So this year I said I'd wear it again because I was meeting several people
sure.
who are Grey Cup or CFL fans like I was, and I knew the cap would be somewhat distinguishable because there weren't going to be a lot of BC fans traveling mm-hmm. from Vancouver, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the story about A, how I got the hat, and B, why I wear it somewhat regularly when I'm up there. It has become sort of like a signature piece for me without it really intending to be.
Fair enough.
That's the story.
Because the only reason I asked is the Lions were not playing in the
Lions
Cup.
Were not playing in the Grey Cup this year, but there I was nevertheless still wearing the picture or still in various pictures wearing that hat.
Sure.
That is the story behind it.
Did Thing One have a good time?
Thing One had a really good time. He was warmer than I was. We froze that night at the game.
What was the temperature?
It was roughly 24 Fahrenheit.
Oh, but, that's right, because we have the cockamamie exactly, British Imperial system.
Exactly. So, but what was happening was the way that they had constructed temporary seats, the wind and the snow were blowing right into the eastern end zones,
oh,
which was temporary, and they were all aluminum.
Oh, God.
So needless to say, there were a lot of cold people that night, all right? And, of course, I think those who were, how do I put this, aided in their warmth by something of a
fermented nature.
Yeah. There you go. They probably felt the cold a little less than I did.
Yeah, I can imagine there were some cold sets of buns that night.
That's putting it mildly. And feet. All right.
That's true.
There were some cold digits.
Yeah, right? I imagine.
So, but a wonderful time.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. And
the folks in Ottawa did one heck of a job putting that Grey Cup Festival and the game together. And they got a great game, too.
And a belated American Thanksgiving to everybody.
Indeed. Indeed.
Unfortunately, we have to now shift to less fun topics.
No, we're choosing to. We could stay on the Grey Cup.
We could, but you have to understand that means our audience of tens would dwindle to an audience of nuns. Not the kind you were educated by.
I was going. I was suddenly wondering where he's going with that. All right. We would be. Would Sister Rapunzel?
The Inquisition. What a show. The Inquisition.
Are you okay?
I'm trying fervently not to think about the last 48 hours in the United States.
They've
but
been problematic.
That's an understatement.
They've been problematic. I'll let you go first on this one, since I basically dominated the first 5 minutes of this show.
Oh,
he's taking his glasses off, folks.
Man.
This won't be good. Go ahead, you go first.
All right. Longtime listeners of both this show and our previous incarnation, simply the Podcast Profs, we'll remember that since January of 2016, you and I have been beating this drum, warning that Donald J. Trump may not have, what's the wonderful euphemism they use, the temperament?
Yes.
To be an effective or even adequate president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The last 24 hours have kind of proved that.
Mm-hmm.
And in all seriousness, I don't wish to make this a downer. We have to have a serious conversation about the mental state of the 45th president. He, over the past 48 hours, has retweeted neo-fascist videos that portray Muslims as any manner of horrid individual. Never mind the fact that all these videos are manufactured. They are not accurate.
Real. They are actually fake news, if you think about
real,
it.
Real, yeah, genuine, the real article. Real fake.
Real fake.
When properly rebuked by the Prime Minister of Great Britain, for those of you who don't remember, kind of our most important ally on Earth, he proceeded to attack the British Prime Minister. So apparently our special relationship is now moving to a very special relationship. He then proceeded to gloat over the exposure of a TV personality as a sexual predator. Apparently the man is also immune to irony. He then proceeded to assume that a media critic of his was a murderer. You can't make this up.
No.
Proceeded to, at that point, issue statements that, in the estimate of our National Security Agency, had placed us closer to war in the Korean Peninsula than any time since 1953. In other words, since the last time shots were fired. The man is genuinely, and I'm sorry, I don't say this from a partisan point of view. Because, of course, if he's removed from office via whatever mechanism, who of course, becomes president of the United States?
Michael John Pence?
No. I don't know his middle name, but let's put it this way. The guy is politically to the right of the right. So it's not like this is an anti-conservative thing. But I think we honestly have to have a discussion. There was a great piece by Ezra Klein of The Atlantic this morning that has openly said, the reason instruments like impeachment and the 25th Amendment exist, they are the in case of emergency break glass moments. We are in an emergency as a people.
And yet you and I know, because we've looked at this question of Trump and the Republicans from different contexts over the past year or so, maybe a little more than a year, but certainly dating to when he was inaugurated in January. None of what you are talking about is going to happen unless enough Republicans are...
Because tax cuts.
Well, yeah, probably because tax cuts.
And by the way, that logic doesn't hold up one iota.
Agree.
Is anyone worried that Mike Pence won't sign it?
But here is the dilemma that, to some extent we face, as I see it. And by the way, I agree with everything you've said. All right. So what I'm about to say does not mean or in any way should suggest that you are wrong. But I think that at some point in the past 20 or so years, I won't give you an exact date or an exact year, but it's in the neighborhood of 20 to 25 years.
I vote 1994. But
all right. If you want to make Newt Gingrich the year zero, so to speak, I won't dispute
patient
that.
Zero. Yeah, I'm comfortable with that.
I'm good with that. So let's just, for sake of argument, make it Newt Gingrich and make it 1994. Great. We have certainly at some point over the past 20 to 25 years stopped as Republicans and Democrats viewing the other side as credible, believable, honest.
Even having a right to govern.
Exist, or having a right to govern. And we really operate now in an environment in which they are two political parties that are not interested in dealing with the other. And so with that in mind, what is there to believe, or why is there any reason to believe that we are going to see
any movement
to accept that things are going to happen?
I don't know.
Because I don't think it's going to happen. I agree with you, but I see no reason or no evidence or no anything for me to believe that Republicans and Democrats are going to get together and have a serious conversation about, does this man or is this man dangerous enough to the country that we need to remove him? I don't see that conversation.
The problem is this is not ideological. This should not be a political issue. This has nothing at all to do with left versus right, liberal versus conservative, big government, small government. It has nothing to do with any of that.
Exactly my point.
Here's the problem. When people are in school and they think about what I want to be when I grow up, there are certain people who want to hold political power in the dreams of becoming a world historical figure. In other words,
nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, ambition is by itself not a bad thing. But to the 535 members of the United States Congress right now, I would like to point out, you're there because we are talking about having a mentally unstable individual who, if I'm being generous, can no longer discern fantasy from reality. If I'm not being generous, a pathological liar with unrestricted access to the world's second largest nuclear arsenal, who has shown an appalling disregard thus far for consequences of his actions because he's never been forced to accept them.
Exactly.
Openly provoking.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most unstable regimes on earth. Unstable in the reckless sense of the term, not in terms of the regime's about to fall.
North Korea.
This is the time we have never faced in the history of the Republic in which this is the ultimate definition of country over party. You remove Donald Trump, Mike Pence becomes president. Nobody's going to argue that. Mike Pence will be president until inauguration day 2021 at the earliest. No one's disagreeing with that. This individual is not mentally stable. He is not mentally sound. And please understand, impeachment was not designed to be a legal mechanism. It is an unabashedly political mechanism. And the goal is to remove someone who has proved themselves to be manifestly incapable of carrying out the office. And even if Congress doesn't want to act because they have to face re-election, to the cabinet of the United States, at how far does this have to go?
You and I, we agree on all this, all right? I agree with everything you have said. I have maintained to you, privately and publicly, that I think the crisis moment, and I could see it coming.
Oh, you can see it from here.
Which is really scary. I can see an order from him as commander-in-chief that is
illegal.
That starts a war.
Yeah.
All right? That starts a war. That at that point, America's men and women in uniform will have to go along with because that's what they are told to do, and that's not, you know, blind devotion. Or they establish a constitutional crisis in which they say, we do not believe that the man giving the order is giving it in a mental framework in which we should accept it. That is the constitutional crisis. And to me, that is the only way that I can see this presidency ending, because what it does is give cover to the wimps who don't want to really take him out, and I don't mean that in a
violent way. You're talking in an institutional sense.
Who do not want to impeach him, who do not want to
invoke the 25th Amendment.
Exactly, because they don't want the wrath of the voters. But what they can then do is turn around and say, listen, our American men and women in uniform would have been put in danger if the president's order was approved. When they said they couldn't do it, that was good enough for us to also say it's enough.
But man, is that a heck of a risk to take.
That's a heck of a risk because the military could turn around and say, okay, fine.
So, right. Or just that, even in doing the right thing, you're potentially opening up a precedent that the military could tell the civilian commander
that we're not going to follow. We're not going to follow your orders.
Now, and to the cabinet, and this is my hope, the reason I think the 25th Amendment is the way to go on this, the vast majority of this cabinet is not going to face any voters.
Mm-hmm.
Got people like James Mattis, Rex mm-hmm. Tillerson, Elaine Chao, Steve Mnuchin. This is the time you have to think about the future of your country. I am not exaggerating when I'm saying future generations of historians are going to look back on this. And And here's the thing. These signs were there. They were publicly stated. This is not a secret.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you that in 20 years, myself or some of the students I'm training now who will be historians, they're going to look back and say, the signs were there. Everybody knew it. Everyone was talking about it. And yet you did nothing. How can you justify this?
Mm-hmm.
Because bear in mind, you're talking about a guy who quite literally might decide, I mean, and we're talking conventional war, God help us, if he decides to utilize a nuclear weapon. I mean, you're talking hundreds of thousands of lives are in the hands of a mentally incompetent individual.
Well, play it out. He decides America's going to drop a nuke or two on North Korea. All right? God. So just play this out. North Korea turns around and knocks and drops a nuke or two on South Korea.
Or Japan
or both.
Or Guam.
Or tries to reach the United States. China is immediately brought in.
Right.
Just because they are the military superpower in that part of the world.
Russia.
Or Russia is brought in some capacity because its Far East basically hugs the Korean Peninsula.
They share
a
border. I mean, it's a tiny border. But
they share a border. Chances are that...
you might see the U.S. kicked out of NATO.
You could see the U.S. booted from NATO out of this. You are going to see the necessity for Japan to rearm itself.
You will essentially see the deliberate destruction and the crumpling up and throwing away of everything every American leader since the end of the Second World War has worked to build.
You effectively wipe Korea off the map.
Right. And by the way, right there, you are talking about 76-ish million people.
You are talking about, if my memory is being kind to me, South Korea has the eighth largest economy in the world.
Right.
I think it's eighth. I may be off, but I think it's eighth largest.
Certainly
in
top
the world.
10.
You are looking at a humanitarian disaster.
Right.
And look, I am not sitting here saying we got to keep Kim Jong-nut in power. That's not my point as well, all right? All right? I admit that Kim Jong-un...
I guess his name is translated slightly differently from what I'm used to.
Exactly.
So.
I mean, look, Kim Jong-un runs, I think, the world's most repressive regime. I accept that. I get it. But you don't, you can't use that as a justification for saying I'm going to drop a nuclear weapon on you.
Well, right. And the scary thing is, and I don't know this for a fact, but there is at least a possibility that Kim Jong-un is the second most unstable world leader in this crisis.
And he might be the first. Who's to know?
He might, but
look, I mean, you look at that scenario and you begin to see just how disastrous this is.
Right.
What if he turns around and says, okay, you know what? We're going to send troops into Mexico to knock out the drug the drug crisis in Mexico. You know, that sounds noble, all right? That sounds noble. Let's help Mexico get rid of the drug problem.
And also historically is something the U.S. has done from time to time.
Yes, yes. And it's going to smack, as it should, of Yankee imperialism.
Because Mexico's a sovereign state.
Precisely. If Mexico says, you know what, please bring 30,000 troops into this country and help us knock this out.
And they will never do that, by the way.
Fine. We do that. But it's not going to happen. You know, the we're not talking about a president who's taking us out of the Paris Climate Agreement at this point.
And right now, by the way, we're the only country not in it.
Yeah. Except for a couple of fringe countries did.
Nicaragua had not joined because they didn't think it went far enough. They signed up. The only other holdout was Syria, and they joined.
Wow. All right. So we are the only ones.
We are the only ones
who are on the outside looking at. Look, this question of Trump's temperance, mental state, whatever. 30 years ago, Donald Trump would have been booted, all right?
He never would have.
He may have. Forget if he would have been elected. Let's say
he wouldn't have been nominated.
Let's say Donald Trump was president of the United States when the year that Reagan was elected, just for sake of argument, all right? Just for sake of argument. He would have been out of office by 1982.
Oh, no question. I just don't know if we've got that much time.
I don't, you know what? This is both a question of time and leadership. It's almost if every Republican, and look, I'm blaming the Republicans only because he's part of their party.
Well,
they're the ones that have to lead.
They control government.
Yeah, they got to lead the charge. For the Republicans to do this, I really think what we're looking at is the Republicans kind of going, are you going to do it?
Yeah.
Are you going to take the lead? How are we going to do this? No one is, pardon the choice of words, man enough to get this done. And I don't mean gender, that's right. Not my point. No one is going to have the spine to stand up to this guy and say, sir, you need to step down.
And that's all. And I just got to repeat, this has to happen, because if it does not happen, the consequences are going to be on the head of the leaders of this government. Because it's blindingly obvious. We have to stop, for want of a better term, tiptoeing around and thinking that, oh, it's just Donald being Donald.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we are in a day and age in which there is a great reckoning
mm-hmm.
of misdeeds. Look at Matt Lauer. Look at Garrison Keillor. Look at Al Franken. To say nothing else of the accused pedophile who may very well be elected senator from Alabama. There has to be accountability towards people's actions. And do you really intend to go to history and saying, but I wanted tax cuts? I mean, I'm sorry to be such a downer on this, but the reason I keep pointing this, I know we're running out of time. This is one of those moments where future people wish they had a time machine and they could go back and warn people. So, I mean, this is one of those times that we have to take control of our own destiny and not leave it for other people. That's just my...
I'm with you 100%. My fear is that what we have become in this country is little sort of supposedly self-standing Democrats on this side, Republicans on this side, and there is a clear lack of guts among leaders. There is a clear lack of support for country first, except for the platitudes when it comes
right.
to waving the flag and supporting veterans and all those sorts of things, which we should do. But those things have become politicized.
It's a fig
well.
Leaf now.
It's a fig leaf. Unless and until we reach a military crisis, I don't think anything is going to be done. And the problem with taking it to a military crisis...
People die.
...is that people die because the men and women in uniform might say, you know what? We are legally required to follow the orders of the President of the United States.
And just one last note. What leadership is the courage
mm-hmm.
to do the right thing when it is inconvenient, when it is difficult. Someone has to be first. To not demand the other side go first, but to actually take that first step. And we're waiting. And right now, and the reason, as you put it, the reason we're putting the onus on the Republican Party is right now, first of all, if the Democrats start it, no one will accept it as legitimate, and we're right back to tribalism. Second of all, the Republican Party controls government. They control what happens. I'm going to say that again for the record. The Republican Party is in command of what happens. Therefore, they also bear responsibility for what happens.
20 years ago, a younger and a healthier John McCain could have been that man. John McCain is 80. John McCain has cancer. It disappoints me greatly to say that I suspect John McCain won't live more than about another year because of the type of cancer he has.
I mean, let's hope he does. But
yeah, I want to be very wrong. But John McCain would have had the kind of gravitas that something like that would have happened. I don't see any other person, being able to do that. On that note, we wrap up episode 14 of
the pod. Upon further review with
the podcast profs. He is
Dr. Soren Fanning.
And I am Dr. Anthony Moretti.
I think next week we need to be a little more upbeat if we can. It's going to be our last one of the semester.
This is true. We got to start looking at schedules.
Tomorrow's December.
I know.
Why is it that when we reach a certain date, some of these like months disappear on you?
I know.
But yeah, I mean, December's coming up. We got the holiday season's coming. We have a new year coming up to look forward to, and then the fall semester.
I think we should also do what we think are the top 10 news stories of the year. Independent,
it said upbeat. No, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding.
Hey, I'm a journalist.
That's true. Oh, I forgot.
There is no upbeat. All right.
Yeah. Well, I'm a historian. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Wait. All right. We will, though. We will look at what we think are the top 10 news stories of the year, domestic, international, irrelevant. And then we'll also look at what we hope to be some positive signs for 2018.
And they are there.
They are there, indeed. What do you think?
I'm okay with that.
You okay with that?
I might not get 10, but I'll find at least a few.
You find a few news stories?
Excellent.
That will work.
Well, thank you for listening. We appreciate it, and we will see you
next week on
Upon Further Review
with
the Podcast Profs.
Indeed.